DW.
I began with Hurston going to have her interviews with Khosla. It was summer when I went to talk with Cujo. So his door was standing wide open.
On December the 14th, 1927, Zora Neale Hurston took the 3:40 p.m. train from Penn Station, New York, to Mobile, Alabama, to conduct a series of interviews with the last known surviving African slave to be brought to America. His name was Khosla, or Cujo, as he was renamed by his masters. The book she wrote, telling the story of Khosla's life, lay unpublished until last year.
Well, the book is so much, but on a very basic level, we can say that it is the story of Oluwole Khosla, who is the last known survivor of the last known slave ship, and it's about his story.
Deborah Plant is a scholar and literary critic who edited the book, which is called Barracoon, The Story of the Last Slave.
It is about his coming up in Bante in West Africa, about his capture, the detainment and the barracoons on the coast at the Bight of Benin, his being forced into servitude in Alabama, and, you know, after the Civil War, of course, his freedom, and how he started again, how he started his life again. So it's about all of that.
Zora Neale Hurston would go on to become a queen of the Harlem Renaissance, a genius as a writer and as a folklorist. She was one of the first African-Americans to collect the stories of African-American culture, and this trip to visit Khosla was the very first time she had journeyed into the field by herself.
Initially, she has an idea about how she wants to get his story, or even what she thinks his story is going to be. And we see in the opening chapters where she is sort of impatient, and he's telling her about his grandfather, about his father, about the king, and she's beginning to get a little impatient. She says, "Well, I want to know about you, Khosla. I want you to tell me about you." And he says, "Where is the house where the mouse is the ruler?"
Khosla was explaining about the importance of ancestors in the West African storytelling traditions and the understanding of the self. For Zora Neale Hurston, it was a lesson that as an ethnographer, she should let the storyteller set the pace.
And so she then allows him to tell his story his way.
She ended up spending months interviewing Khosla. Sometimes she would arrive at his house only to be told to come back the next day, or to come back the next week, or
she'll come and he says, "Well, I have to clean the church." You know, he was the sexton of the church. And she says, "Well, I'll help you." And then sometimes, you know, they're going to have some watermelon first.
Fly around, watermelon so sweet. Don't need no meat.
Or maybe they're going to go to the coast and get some crabs.
The book follows the rhythm of Khosla's life, and we feel the pulse of his daily living.
She you know, gives us this really authentic, warm, and very, it's like a living testimony of a life. And it's like you're even there, you know, when you read it, you're there when they're talking.
I'm gonna move.
I hailed him by his African name as I walked up the steps to his porch, and he looked up into my face as I stood in the door in surprise. He was eating his breakfast from a round enamel pan with his hands in the fashion of his fatherland.
You're not a woman about it. You always hang around.
After months of interviews and longer working on the manuscript back in New York, Hurston was ready to send it to the publishers. They wanted to publish it, but had one condition.
And they have conditions, and the condition was, if you can give it to us in language rather than dialect, we want to publish this manuscript.
What the publisher meant by give it to us in language was write it in standard English. Committed ethnographer that she was, Hurston had written Cassola's speech phonetically, spelling words the way they were pronounced and including all his repetitions.
Encoded in the vernacular that Khosla spoke was his whole history. We have to remember that Khosla was captured when he was 19 years old. That means he was speaking some version of Yoruba. Encoded in that language that Khosla spoke is everything about what happened to Khosla and the millions of African peoples who speak any form of an Atlantic Creole throughout the Americas. And so because she knew that, she refused to change it. She'd rather not publish the manuscript than to basically erase Khosla, which is what would have been the consequence if she had changed the language.
So the manuscript was never published. After Zora Neale Hurston's death in 1960, it sat in Howard University archives gathering dust. Then, a few years ago, the decision was taken to publish it as part of a wider revival of interest in Hurston's work. Deborah was asked to edit it, and so she went to the Howard University archive and read the manuscript for the first time.
How did I feel? Let's see. I'm just utterly impressed, just amazed at the genius of Zora Neale Hurston, just very moved by Khosla's story. Reading the manuscript, it's more like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's more than reading it. It's an experience of feeling my ancestors right there with me reading that. One of the main things I think we get from this story when we read it is the humanity of Oluwole Khosla.
When Hurston was writing, it was the era of segregation and Jim Crow, of ideologies of white supremacy that dehumanized non-white people.
Hurston's response to that was not so much to contest it, but to show actually what was really true about people of color and what was true about black people. And so she spent her years, you know, collecting and preserving and celebrating African-American folklore and folk life. And it's what she referred to or described as, you know, the greatest cultural wealth on the continent.
And so we come back to Cassola's story, or Cudjo Lewis, as he was called by the American slave owners, who found his real name too difficult to say.
Khosla says that it was too crooked for him to call. And so Khosla asks him, he says, well, am I your property? And Timothy Mayer says, well, yeah. He says, well, call me Cudjo then, that'd do.
From 1801 to 1866, an estimated 3,873,600 Africans were exchanged for gold, guns, and other European and American merchandise. Khosla was the very last of them, and his story, told in his own words by one of the great writers of the 20th century, is unforgettable.
The surprise of seeing me halted his hand between pan and face, then tears of joy welled up. Oh, Lord, I know it. You call my name. Nobody don't call me my name from across the water but you. You always calling me Khosla, just like I in the Africa song.
This is Ashley Byrne for DW.
DW.